supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. After almost 40 years in prison, a member of MOVE, a radical political group convicted of killing a police officer in 1978, has been released. On Saturday, Debbie Africa walked out of the state prison in Cambridge Springs, Pennsylvania, and is now staying with her son and her granddaughter. WHYY's Peter Crimmins reports.
Debbie Sims Africa is now 62 years old, living with her 39-year-old son, who was born in prison, and trying to figure out how to work a cell phone. She walks with an electronic monitor locked to her ankle. After nearly four decades, the first of the MOVE 9, convicted of killing police officer James Ramp in a shootout in Philadelphia's Powelton Village neighborhood in 1978, has been released from prison.
I still don't think I've actually caught up with my emotions on how happy it makes me feel, you know, seeing my family.
Africa faced a parole board at the same time as two other members of the MOVE, Janine and Janet Africa. They were denied.
I still felt incomplete. The fact that I left prison and my sisters Janine and Janet didn't. You know, we came in on the same charges, we were arraigned the same, but when it came time to get out of prison, they didn't do that the same. So it's still a bittersweet victory for me.
That 1978 standoff was a precursor to the infamous bombing on Osage Avenue 7 years later. In 1985, a similar standoff resulted in the police dropping an incendiary bomb on top of the house where the MOVE had fortified themselves. It resulted in the deaths of 6 adults and 5 children. 2 of those children were Janet and Janine's, who were in prison when it happened. Debbie Africa's attorney, Brad Thompson of the Chicago-based People's Law Office, said all 3, Debbie, Janet, and Janine, had exemplary prison records.
None of them have had any disciplinary infractions in decades. So it's hard to understand the rationale or the justification since all of these circumstances in the record are so remarkably similar.
The Office of the District Attorney, Larry Krasner, sent letters to the parole board in favor of the release of the 3 women, saying after 39 years, they do not pose a threat to society. Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Some 22 attendees at last weekend's Arts All Night Festival in Trenton, New Jersey, continue to recover from injuries sustained during a mass shooting. Let's get perspective on that event and the role of the arts in Trenton with Trenton-born singer, songwriter, actress, and producer Sarah Dash. Sarah, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
You're welcome.
And Sarah, let's also note that you are the first named arts ambassador to the city of Trenton. You are halfway through a 2-year term.
Halfway in October.
What are some of the responsibilities of that position?
Well, some of the responsibilities I've sort of taken on my own was, one, to represent the city. And in representing the city, I try to present to them my best musical self, but also give a bit of information about how I feel and see the city growing in the arts and music community.
Were you born and raised in the city's West Ward where you're currently residing?
We moved to the West Ward when I was about 12 years old.
And you said that music changed your life. You were around the middle of a very large family of brothers and sisters. How did music come to you?
There was always gospel music in the house. My father was a Pentecostal pastor. My mother was a nurse, and they played gospel music. My mother, all the time, my mom played piano. I sang in the choir, in the junior choir in the Trenton Church of Christ, where my father was the assistant pastor there. It was, as a teenager, we started rolling around in the glee club and decided that we wanted to have a singing group, and we named ourselves the Del Capris. Some of the young ladies' parents did not want them in the music industry, so there was Nona and I left to pursue a music career with Patti LaBelle and Cindy Birdsong, who were out of Philadelphia. The click is that we had the same manager for our teenage groups, and he put us together, and that's why you have Trenton and Philadelphia.
It's a pleasure and honor learning and being entertained by your stories, but quite frankly, the catalyst for this phone call was the horrific shooting at last Sunday's Arts All Night Festival.
Yes.
Of course, the organizers are saying the show will go on next year, but do you think it will be, obviously with security in place, but do you think it might change the essence of the day and night?
Yes, some may be reluctant. It may affect, but, you know, tomorrow I'm hosting my music program with the children. They're coming from the city, all over the city, with different orchestras, poetry, singing, acting, and, well, there was some question as to whether we should not have this tomorrow. But we decided that we're going to not let a bunch of bullies or people with problems come in and affect the music and arts community in Trenton. If we were to give in, that means violence wins. And I'm not prepared as a music ambassador to have a couple of people affect thousands who love music, because we know music bridges the gap. It brings people together.
You've made countless people happy, and it's wonderful that you continue to pay it forward.
Thank you so much, Dave, and I appreciate your interest in having me speak. I hope there's some moved by what I've said today, and that they will not be reluctant to come to our town. It's small, but there's going to be a lot of wonderful things there. We're going to have city summer programs. There are going to be noontime concerts taking place during the summer months. And I think those who are interested in Trenton should come and see Trenton and not be swayed by what happened. There's always going to be a bad apple in the basket. So once you pluck it out, everyone else, all the other apples are healthy and bubbling, and you can bite into them, chew them, and they'll be juicy and lovely.
Sarah Dash, inaugural music ambassador for the city of Trenton, New Jersey. The Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission is set to convene hearings Thursday regarding the case of five black women who allege racial and gender bias against a York County golf club. As Keystone Crossroads' Annette John Hall reports, the incident has gained national attention and has echoes of the Philadelphia Starbucks episode and others when people call the police on African Americans for dubious reasons.
First, they were accused of playing too slowly.
We weren't playing slow.
Then they were ordered to vacate the golf course.
We paid our money, we're members, and we don't deserve this.
Then the police were called on them. That's when Sandra Thompson, Carolyn Dow, and their three other African-American friends decided the only reason they were being harassed was because of their race. For Dow, a seasoned golfer who has played all over the world, the April incident at the Grandview Golf Club still shakes her.
I'm really literally afraid to go on another golf course at this particular time, wondering if they're watching me.
Thompson and Dow, along with Karen Crosby, Sandra Harrison, and Mynika Ojo, who call themselves Sisters in the Fairway, were looking forward to their first outing of the season. But things quickly turned ugly when five white men who identified themselves as club management approached them on the second hole and told them they weren't keeping up with the pace of play. The women disputed that claim, and so did the white men who were playing behind them.
For months, I've been waiting to say this, the fact that this was wrong, the fact that it was unjust and that they were racially targeted.
Robert Winrick was one of those men and says one of his group was walking the course, which ensured they wouldn't catch up to the women. Winrick says he couldn't believe it when Steve Chronister, the club manager and a former York County commissioner, told him on the 10th hole that he had called the police on the women.
I'm thinking in my head, what is going on? These women are polite, they're professional, they're stand-up women. They weren't doing anything disrespectful. They were having a good time.
Mr. Bryant's not here anymore today.
We went to the Grandview Club to talk to the management, but we were told they weren't available. Chronister told the York Daily Record there's more to the story, but has since declined comment.
Yes, I'm Steve Chronister with Grandview Golf Club in Dover Township.
Mm-hmm. Here, Chronister gives his immediate account in 911 calls placed that day.
She totally thinks being racist. We're not being racist. We're being golf course management that has to have play moving a certain way.
Okay, sir, there's no weapons, right?
No.
Is anybody intoxicated?
Other than her mouth,
Sandra Thompson, an attorney who is also president of the York NAACP, guesses that dig was directed at her.
So you know I'm an attorney. You know I ran for judge the year prior. The only reason why you knowingly treat me this way is because I'm black. There is no way he would treat a white attorney the same way.
Before the police arrived that day, Thompson recorded a cell phone video of her confrontation with management.
Remove yourself from our premises,
please. In the next 5 minutes, please.
Chronister can be heard speaking to his son Jordan and another staffer, indicating that Thompson was enjoying the attention.
Back off.
This is what you want. Yep. This is what she does for a living.
It's fine.
After the cops came, no charges were filed.
What was the confrontation? You came to us. We were trying to tee off.
Thompson says the hearing this week is a start, but she wants to see policies changed too, like fines imposed on those who call 911 when a crime isn't being committed.
For some reason, people are being empowered to vocalize more internal thoughts of white privilege in white spaces. And the more we continue to stand up, the more bystanders speak out, then the less these people who are now popping up and feeling empowered, the less they will feel free to do so.
It's unclear if the Chronisters will accept the invitation to testify at the hearing. Annette John Hall, Keystone Crossroads.
This month, the Pennsylvania Attorney General is expected to release findings from a 2-year grand jury investigation into widespread sexual abuse and cover-up within 6 Roman Catholic dioceses across the state. In anticipation of the report, Keystone Crossroads' Lindsay Lazarski looks at a push in the state capitol to give more legal rights to child sex abuse victims.
In Pennsylvania, victims of child sexual abuse have until they are 30 years old to file a civil case and until they are 50 to file a criminal case. State Representative Mark Rossi has a bill that would eliminate statute of limitation restrictions moving forward. The Berks County Democrat told the grand jury about his own personal experience with child sexual abuse. He testified that at the age of 13, he was raped in the shower by a Catholic priest in the Allentown Diocese.
As children, we do not have any idea what a statute of limitations is. And until we find out later in life the process of what happened to us and fully understand it, and then when we're ready to come forward, our perpetrator gets to walk free, and then we end up living in silence and suffering the rest of our lives.
The bill would also give victims already over 30 a 2-year window to file a civil claim. The Pennsylvania Catholic Conference has strongly opposed such measures in the past. The state Senate did pass a bill last year eliminating statute of limitations for sex abuse crimes. Republican leaders there, though, say allowing victims who've already timed out to retroactively file a case would be unconstitutional. Lindsay Lazarski, Keystone Crossroads.
You probably know the feeling of being rushed at the doctor's office. You've got lots of questions, but it seems like your doctor is in and out of the appointment so fast there's no time to ask. Well, as it turns out, a lot of doctors wish they had more time as well. That's why 2 pediatricians at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia have started a podcast specifically for the patients they wish they could spend the most time with, Latino families. WHYY's Nina Feldman reports.
Edith Bracho Sanchez was spanked as a child, and everyone around her thought that was totally normal. Now she's a pediatrician, and she would never recommend physical discipline to any of the families she sees. But she knows it's still common in the Latino community.
So I think once you understand that it is accepted and expected, you can start from a place of understanding that we're not here to judge you. What we want to do is give you the latest evidence that we have and give you alternatives.
Bracho Sanchez is the host of Las Doctoras Recomiendan, a weekly podcast supported by the American Academy of Pediatrics. In it, she tackles difficult subjects in health specific to the Latino community.
Hola, hola, familia. Les habla la doctora Edith Bracho Sanchez, y esto es Las Doctoras Recomiendan. El podcast.
Most episodes feature an interview with a specialist, like a nutritionist talking about why it's not recommended to give babies juice in their bottles, or a psychologist on how to talk to kids about racism. The more they talked to their patients, the more the producers of the show realized that staying healthy for a lot of their families meant addressing some very real immigration concerns.
Should you go see a doctor or should you stay home? Is it worth it to go to the doctor from an immigration standpoint? And then if you find yourself detained, then what do you do? And what can your children do?
So they brought an immigration lawyer on the show to walk through the current law, dispel rumors, and encourage people to, yes, go to the doctor. Since the show launched in March, Bracho Sanchez says they've been spreading the word by sharing it with pediatricians around the country. They advertised on social media and recently interviewed some Latina mom bloggers in hopes of tapping into their audiences. They also hand out cards that explain how to listen to all the Latino families that they see at their doctor's office. Nina Feldman, WHYY News.
Fans of Only a Game, heard Sunday mornings at 6 on WHYY-FM, have precious few opportunities remaining to savor the show's sports stories, insights, and occasional doggerel proffered by the program's first and only host, Bill Littlefield. Joining me with a look back and then ahead is host, author, columnist, and teacher, Bill Littlefield. Bill, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
And, of course, this is a show that's not about sports. And a recent talk that you made focused on, yes, football, America's number one sport, and why it's so popular here and not elsewhere. And it has a lot to do with our loving the spectacle of, quite frankly, violence.
I think it also has a tremendous amount to do with the way the NFL has marketed itself over the years. They have managed to make pro football a 12-month-a-year sport. Who would ever have thought that watching teams pick the players that they next wish to employ would become a gigantic television spectacle, and yet the NFL has managed to create that. So, you know, more power to them and as marketers, and shame on them for so hideously neglecting the damage that they've done to so many guys who've played over the years.
I'm going to put a question to you. This is an easy one because you posed it to analyst Charlie Pierce on the occasion, I believe, of your 20th anniversary show. Succinctly, although we don't have the requisite 3 hours, what are some of the significant developments on the sports scene since July 1993, when Only a Game first aired?
I think the most significant development on the sports scene in my lifetime is the advances and the gains that have been made by women and girls in sports. And it's partly Title IX, but it's partly the determination of lots of women and girls to claim their opportunities and make the most of their opportunities. When I was a kid growing up, females who were athletes didn't really have very many options. Maybe they could play tennis, maybe they could swim competitively, maybe they could play golf. Women were not playing soccer, they weren't playing basketball, they weren't playing ice hockey, and there certainly were no college scholarships in those areas. Now, you've got not only scholarships in those areas, you've got professional leagues in those areas. And think of it, in a fairly short period of time, half the population suddenly begins to get opportunities that they've never had before. It's still not as good as it should be, and people don't pay as much attention as they should to female athletes, and they don't support female athletes in team sports especially as much as they should, but at least it's headed in the right direction.
Bill, how has the show evolved, not over the entire 25 years, but in the past few, and do you have any hand in seeing where it's going next?
We have become more and more a show that's dedicated to what's now called narrative storytelling. It's the thing that characterizes National Public Radio on the weekends more than anything else. We used to do conversations with analysts. We used to do some shtick, some silly stuff. We used to do more talking to people at places like the Kentucky Derby or talking to analysts like Helene Elliott about the National Hockey League. And now we are more completely a storytelling show where we'll have three substantial stories a week, and then we do the roundtable, which addresses, to some extent, current sports matters. And then, of course, my conversation with Charlie Pierce, which I look forward to every week.
With a lot of mileage left in your tank, what's next?
The idea is to retire to some things rather than just from something, and I hope I'll still be doing some commentaries. I've been carrying around a book in my head for a long time that I want to sit down and see if I can actually write. And, of course, over the years, I've met numbers of people in the process of doing stories and interviewing people. I've met numbers of people who have been doing really interesting and productive and useful things. And I found myself from time to time saying, oh, boy, wouldn't it be great if I had the time to join them and work on that thing that they're doing? And now I'm going to have that time. So I'll be working with some kids, and I'll be doing a little teaching, and I look forward to that.
Good luck in the final home stretch of this iteration, and I can't wait to read your next book and hear what's next.
It's good talking to you.
Bill Littlefield, host of Only a Game, heard Sunday mornings at 6 on WHYY-FM. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on your favorite podcast app or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.